This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome, everybody, to the Collector's Compass by Collector's MD. This podcast will help collectors navigate the fine line between passion and compulsion. I'm your host, Alex Efron, and today we're kicking off our very first live episode with a guest whose story is as powerful as it is inspiring. Our guest today is Kevin Kostrava. Kevin is a licensed gambling counselor and drug and alcohol counselor who has not only helped countless people find their way out of addiction, but has also walked that difficult path himself. With over 7 years of sobriety, Kevin's journey from battling addiction to becoming a licensed counselor gives him a unique perspective, one that we're incredibly fortunate to have on today's show. But this isn't just a story of struggle. It's a conversation packed with practical advice. Kevin will be sharing his insights on the psychology of gambling, how it overlaps with collecting hobbies like sports cards and TCG, and most importantly, how you can recognize the warning signs of compulsive spending before it takes control. So whether you're a casual collector, a high-stakes buyer, or someone who's felt the tug of addiction yourself, this episode is for you. So grab your headphones, settle in, and we will dive into the first ever episode of The Collector's Compass. Kevin, welcome to the show, man. We are glad to have you. And like I told you right before we hopped in, I'm going to quickly post to the Collector's MD Instagram stories to let people know that we are now live. But while I do that, why don't you give us a quick intro as to who you are and a little bit about your background.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. So my name is Kevin Kostrava, and I'm, you know, very glad to be here today. So I am a what's called Certified Alcohol and Drug Counselor, CADC. And an International Certified Gambling Counselor, ICGC-1, and a clinical psychology major, currently working at a residential treatment center. I'm also someone who is in long-term recovery myself. I have 7 years of sobriety now, and my journey through addiction, trauma, and healing has not only shaped who I am, but why I speak out about this. I've experienced firsthand how something as innocent as collecting cards or joining in box breaks can spiral into an obsession, financial chaos, and emotional pain. But I am very passionate about helping others find their way because I've been there. I know what it takes to face the truth, to have to rebuild and to heal. And this podcast, hopefully, will be able to not only identify that, but dive into conversations about gambling addiction and where it hides in plain sight, like sports cards, collecting, box breaks, and so-called hobbies that blur in between passion and compulsion. We're not sugarcoating anything here. It's just obviously real talk, lived experience, tools and awareness, recovery and healing. So whether you're struggling in the industry or starting to question your relationship with this world, I'm honored to be here and to help out and to give out insight.
Amazing, Kevin. Thanks so much for joining. Thank you for reaching out too. You mentioned that you stumbled across Collector's MD after seeing, I think you said Jeff Wilson's episode on Cards HQ or Sports Card Investor, where he gave Collectors MD a shout out. Very appreciative that folks in the industry and in the hobby are starting to recognize Collectors MD and acknowledging us. We are a safe space for collectors who are going through it, who have found themselves in tough situations, whether they are spiraling in a cycle that they can't break from, or just starting to realize that there are people out there who may have some tendencies that look very similar to that of gambling addiction. And so this is all about pro support, pro accountability, spreading awareness, getting the word out there. It may not necessarily be you who has a problem. It might be a friend or a family member, but the most important thing here is, again, getting the word out there, sharing this message, and helping people find a way out. Because that's something that I, felt like I had to do by myself when I was going through it. And, that's no fun. We heal in group. We can't do it alone. We need to have a support group around us in order to overcome some of these obstacles. So really appreciate you you being here. So let's dive in. You mentioned that you have experience, obviously counseling, alcohol, drug problems, but also gambling, and you've experienced all three yourself. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes. And the gambling, that came actually into the, discussion about 2 years after being sober from drugs and alcohol. So what we like to call that is cross addiction, meaning I went from one addiction into another because I didn't realize that gambling was an addiction, right? Why that it's also called the hidden addiction, because it's something that you can hide very well versus drugs and alcohol. It's very noticeable if somebody is either, withdrawing or under the influence. Whereas if I spend all my money on, a casino app or a breaking app or on eBay afterwards, if that decision isn't a good one, no one's going to be able to see that decision as if you were to take drugs or alcohol. So I got sober 7 years ago from drugs and alcohol. I had a rough childhood background. I don't come from much. My father passed when I was young. My mom went to prison for 10 years when I was 13. And my football kind of changed my life. Football changed my life. I was very good at it. And I had a lot of anger problems as a child. And it was my outlet. And my football coach not only saved my life, but took me in and showed me how to be a man. And football wired me to learn how to become where I am today. But the thing about cards is I started loving cards because of my father. So I remember the first time I opened a pack with my dad, and that was in 2001 with Topps looking for Albert Pujols, I believe. And I remember my dad was a advocate Joe Sakic collector and Barry Bonds collector. And then when he passed, that was the only way I felt meaning to connect to him. So I began, collecting, rapidly, roughly, in my high school days around when Mike Trout came out, because I live in South Jersey near Millville where Mike Trout's from. Yeah. And long story short, collecting went into, through high school, everything was fine. And then I didn't really have problems with substance use or drug problems until I was around 21. And then I got sober at 26, and I'm 26, and I'm 32 now. And then after I became sober, I started getting into stuff like shoes.
Yeah.
I started collecting shoes. And then I remember on the Nike app, I hit a pair of Travis Scott's, and I seen that there was a thing called StockX, and I seen they're $1,200, and I paid $160. So I sold them. I got addicted to that behavior. started buying all these shoes and spending all my time away from my family trying to get shoes. And then I got back into cards during a little bit before the pandemic, I would say 2018. And it spiraled rapidly because I have addictive behaviors. This is what it is in somebody that battles with recovery. Yeah. And I had not gambled now for over about 4 years now, I would say, about that, when breaking actually got bigger, I was lucky to get away. But what I want to share is that sports box breaking and collecting mimic gambling behaviors in powerful ways, especially like live stream breaks, rare car chases, and high value resale markets. These activities are they're not classified as like gambling legally, but they correspond psychologically and behaviorally, and they activate the same circuits in the brain, in the reward right. system that gambling on like slot machines do.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah, man.
So what you don't know is like with the mechanism similar to slot machines, you don't know what you're going to get in the pack, right? Some right. cards are common while others are very valuable. You know, the result is an intermittent, what we call in clinical psychology, it is called an intermittent reinforcement. It keeps people buying or gambling in hopes of the big reward. What we like to call in gambling, the bailout, right? We're looking for that big hit.
The big hit. Yep.
And that can rapidly turn and spiral into what will then ultimately identify as chasing losses, and collectors continue to buy in the breaks and money's lost trying to get that valuable card. And you know, we're going to get into other things that correspond with this, but what I really want to tell people though is that everything with the hobby I love, but we do need to figure out a way to regulate these apps that are making billions of dollars, like Whatnot and stuff, because it shouldn't be allowed to let somebody just rapidly spend as much money as possible without a way to be able to eliminate or reduce it. You get what I'm saying? Like versus 100%. Like you have like casino apps, you can make deposit limits weekly. You can set these standards. But you can't on these other, I don't want to use Whatnot, and I apologize for that because there's other ones, so I'm not going to name them personally, but these apps, there's no way to reduce your spendings or you know, to even help your impulse. It's right. just spend freely as much money as you have, and we don't care how much debt you get in, as long as you're buying into these breaks and car and you know, loot boxes and everything that we have.
Right. Well, first of all, it's uncanny how much you and I have in common in terms of, you know, just, I think, addiction, not just addiction, but having an obsessive, maybe addictive personality. I was into sneakers for the better part of my 20s, pretty much, you know, my entire adulthood. I grew up in the 90s. I'm 35, so we're not too far apart in age. And I grew up in the 90s, you know, Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan era. I was collecting basketball cards, baseball cards, Pokemon cards as a kid. You know, I was always really intrigued by sneakers and the different brands and models that, you know, basketball players were wearing. Obviously, Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, who else? Penny Hardaway, Scottie Pippen. I mean, the list goes on. Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter. I mean, these guys were superheroes to me. And sneakers just always, you know, just pulled my heartstrings. And so when I got older and I was able to afford them, and they started to retro a lot of these sneakers that, you know, I obviously wanted as a kid, I felt so compelled to own them. Like I own some sort of piece of history or some sort of memento that tied me directly to that athlete. And so I got really, really into sneaker collecting to the point where I, at one point, ended up with over 500 pairs of sneakers. And it got out of hand you know, relatively quickly. And, you know, my wife would make comments, she was my girlfriend at the time, you know, about my spending and the amount of room that they would take up and, you know, how big of a pain it was to maneuver and move. And so, you know, fast forward to 2020, around the time of the pandemic, and a buddy of mine reintroduced me to the hobby, sports card hobby. And so the sneaker obsession quickly evolved into a sports card obsession. I got sucked in really quickly with the breaking on both sides. We were actually breaking under the brand BOGO Breaks. And we were doing that for about a year and a half, 2 years or so. But on the other side, I was joining breaks. I was buying personals, and it just, you know, got more and more out of hand. And all in the meanwhile, I was also gambling to kind of fuel that addiction, that need to spend. And so, again, like I've been immersed in it my entire life. I've overspent, overexerted myself to the point of, you know, exhaustion, to the point of, you know, nearly destroying a lot of things in my life where I prioritized things that I shouldn't have. And so I've definitely been through the ringer. I mentioned to you that I acknowledged that I had a gambling addiction several years ago. I attended a Gamblers Anonymous meeting.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
An outpatient facility here in New Jersey called Right Choice Recovery, where I did an 18-week program. And, you know, it's been a part of my life now because it's a lifelong commitment for some time. And so with that, you know, I realized and I acknowledged a while ago that there are absolutely zero guardrails in place, no accountability, no transparency, nothing that has been
disclaimer
to the gambling world exists within the sports card hobby or any hobby for that matter. And so I've been toying with the idea of Collectors MD for some time. And finally, push came to shove. And I said, you know what? If not now, when? You know? And I had a little bit of this imposter syndrome, as it's called, where I wasn't sure if I was the right person to carry this message, just given my history and you know, challenges that I faced myself with addiction. Like we talked about, I'm not a licensed therapist, I'm not a doctor, and so who am I to be giving advice, right? But what I realized is that it's just so incredibly important and impactful for this message to be coming from somebody who's lived it. Lived experience cannot be compared to, you know, anything. I mean,
what question do you think I'm most asked as a licensed drug and alcohol counselor? What do you think the most question asked when a client first comes in and meets with me?
Man, I don't.
they ask me, are you in recovery or not?
And are you in recovery yourself?
Yes, and usually, depending on the relationship, as a licensed counselor, we're taught not to disclose information if we don't have to. However, right. Only if it benefits the client, then we will. Then I will. Right. So it depends on the client how they ask. But most of the time, I say I am, and they go, "You." So a lot of times when we talk to people, if their arms are closed, that's a tell sign that they're keeping something in that they're not expressing. So when I have a client in an individual session and their arms are crossed, I'm either A, not they're not comfortable with me, or B, I haven't expressed or opened up the right tactic, which we call motivational interviewing. MI. It's an approach that we use in therapy. So what I'll do is I'll tell them, yes, I am in recovery. And you'll see them drop their arms and go, man, what does somebody not in recovery have to have any business with being a counselor. And I'm like, and I'm like, wow, you know, like that. So like, you don't realize someone like you, how much value you have to this industry, you know? So don't sell yourself short. Absolutely. Because you're, even if you're not licensed, you're still a peer recovery support advocate, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And for you, you know, you add, you have this whole additional layer as a therapist.
The schooling now. Right.
Where you, you know, like most doctors, you know, that study medicine, let's say, you know, a doctor that focuses on, you know, cancer patients, right? They may know the ins and outs of, you know, whatever cancer they specialize in, but they don't, no matter how hard they try, will never truly understand the pain that one of their patients has to endeavor when going through, you know, all of the trauma that comes with that, whether that be, you know, the actual illness itself, the chemotherapy, radiation, you know, all of those things. Again, like you can't say that you've lived it until you actually have, even if you are a professional. And that's subjective, you know, people might argue otherwise.
Well, you can also experience it too, though. Like you could have it, like, you know, you could have, let's say a counselor isn't, or someone isn't in recovery and live that life. They may have a significant other or brother, sister, father, mother that were and got to see it firsthand. So they still can relate and still bring in, bring experience that I don't, you know, that other people may not have. So, you know, there's it, like you said, it's whatever really form or whatever way you want to look at it, but it's ultimately, we're just trying to make I like to make people feel as most comfortable as possible and know that I do truly understand what it's like to have nothing and to have to start over and to feel that burden and the depression. And I do want to, we'll go over, you know, what that stuff looks like after, you know, facing reality, because ultimately that's the hardest thing to do. Right. And that's the whole point of this, right. Trying to spread information to identify if people are at a point where they need to stop, or if they are and what stage of change, right. There's 5 stages of change. And what we call in clinical psychology, you know, is pre-contemplation stages. They have a problem, but they don't admit it. They think that they can control it. That's what we call pre-contemplation. And then we have stage 2, ultimately, which is what every client is in once they're in treatment. And that's the stage where I see I have a problem. I admit I have a problem, and I'm willing to try to change it. Right. So it's really hard to get somebody from 1 to 2. But once you get to 2 and you're willing to change it, 3, 4, and 5 ultimately will be able to come. And what we want to do is ultimately get people to realize that it's not embarrassing. It's not shameful to ask for help. You know, it's not, you're not the only, you know, sometimes you feel like you're the only person in the world that's doing this and that you're crazy. You know, we're identifying that sports card breaking and, you know, buying cards and games of chance and these type of things, you feel like, because it's not classified like gambling at casinos is that it's embarrassing and that you're the only one and that you don't want to talk about it. But that's not the truth. And we're here to tell you that firsthand, because I know what it's like to, you know, spend all my money on a prospect and then, you know, them not paying out, or, you know, 2 a.m. my wife's asleep and the kids are asleep and I'm bored and I had a rough week, or I thought about something during that time my friend passed, and I was just buying in the breaks because I wanted to feel a part of something. Sometimes people don't have someone, they don't have people in their lives really, and they want to feel a part of something, but they can feel a part of, you know, Collectors MD is what we're trying to say, and we're here to help out. And I just want to let people know who are just joining the channel that don't even break cards or don't have a gambling addiction, what box breaking is. So really, it's where people pay to join a break. And an example would be, right, you would pay $50 for a spot in a 10-person break of like a $500 box, and you would get a random team or division or whatever. And the cards are randomly assigned or selected, and it's basically it's a game of chance. And majority walk away with cards that are worthless, less than what they paid, similar to betting. And where you can find box breaking is they're streamed on TikTok, YouTube, Twitch, and other apps as well. They're fast paced. They have loud reactions. There's a lot of peer pressure as well in chat. You'll see people say, "Get another one," or "You're on a roll. Why stop now?" Yeah. And that's what we call reinforcement from seeing others hit big, right? The last guy just hit a Ohtani 101, so now I'm going to hit Aaron Judge or, you know, and
saying that I've been preaching, you know, it's like looking in a mirror.
And that excitement adds impulsivity associated with gambling. And that's really what, you know, this industry is. And that's what I just wanted to explain.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This is exactly the type of content that I've been putting out now for the last 2.5 months since starting Collectors MD. Education, reinforcement, explaining to our audience what breaking is, because to the average consumer, it's relatively foreign. It's like, what is this? You know, this childhood hobby, this children's toy, especially when you start talking about Pokemon and Magic the Gathering and V Friends and all of these, TCGs that have entered the arena. It's hard to really wrap your head around, especially as it pertains to something as serious and as complex as gambling and addiction. And so, I put out a lot of content across all social medias about what Collectors MD is, who we are, what we're all about, what we're trying to do within this industry as far as advocate for reform and create guardrails and guidelines that don't currently exist in this space. As far as breaking goes, it's the Wild West, right? You have these platforms. You mentioned some of the social platforms, but you also have Whatnot and Fanatics Live and Loop, and eBay is now involved, and there are others. And again, there are truly no guidelines in place that facilitate this experience, allow for a level of fairness and protection for the consumer. And some of those guardrails that we've been discussing and advocating for include everything from, and I'll just go down the list here because I have it in my notes. And we also have a section of the website dedicated to this, but we're talking about age verification and access control, transparency in pricing and odds. The most important, in my opinion, is user spending limits and self-exclusion tools, which again, exist within the gambling world but don't exist within the hobby. So things like implemented user defined spending limits, whether that be daily, weekly, or monthly, self-exclusion options for users who wish to restrict themselves from participating in breaks for a set period, real-time spending tracking with clear notifications to users, and then beyond that, responsible gaming warnings and support resources. Why isn't there any messaging around responsible ripping? That exists in every single gambling ad you see. Somebody who has a problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Why doesn't that exist on Whatnot or Fanatics Live or any of these other platforms where high stakes chasing exists with the same gambling like mechanics? It's the exact same thing. And so we're pushing for prominent display of responsible collecting and gaming messages, links to support organizations like Collectors MD or other problem gambling helplines, mandatory acknowledgement of responsible gaming terms before joining a break, And the list goes on. You know, we talk about real-time transaction records and receipts, transparent break rules and formats, independent verification of randomization. Obviously, a lot of that is going on. Various prohibited practices and penalties, things like RASs and, you know, platform owners or employees joining their own breaks. I mean, that is just completely absurd. Moderation and reporting mechanisms, education and awareness initiatives, compliance with financial regulations, and fair refund and dispute resolution policies. So this is all stuff that, you know, we don't necessarily control. We aren't a gaming commission. We can't just come in like the SEC and say, we're cracking down the law, we're going to, you know, regulate all this. But what we can do is push for reform and advocate for accountability.
Well, I'm here to tell you that it's going to happen soon, because the reason I'm going to tell you this is my certification as an ICGC1 has just core inspired with gaming. So now I had to take in the additional certification to now. I'm grandfathered in. I became licensed before we the International Counseling Board has combined with gaming now. So what they're trying to, so now what I'm able to do is I'm also able to cover gaming. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because they're going to start regulating gaming at some point. Now that's what I see. There's no way in heck that the International Board of Gaming gets sponsored, or not sponsored, but licensed in with gaming responsibilities and behaviors, and that they're not going to fight for regulation. And as a voice, I have reached out to the one of the most powerful people in the gambling industry. Her name is Jody Beckhold, and she is she does supervision for 800 Gambler, and has been a big person in my life. But she has a big voice, and also there's apps like Gamban, it's called, that can block.
I've tried that.
Yeah, so maybe reach out and see if they'll be willing to maybe do some type of deal for.
Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades, now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. These breaking apps. Yeah, man. And also, I wanted, since we were talking about tools to help out with gambling, there's a couple other things, such as so there's a card that's called TrueLink. So what that is that it was made for people with substance use disorders, theoretically, or older adults, so that other people, let's say your mom is elderly, and you know, you can share that information, that card information, and link it to her daughter, your daughter or son's account, so that they can make sure that they're not getting scammed. You know how a lot of older people get scammed by, you know, these random calls and this and that. So that with the substance use disorders, they realize, oh, it could work for gambling. Is basically you can type in a transaction, and let's use Whatnot, for example. You can then click the transaction, and you can make a commitment to how much you're going to spend monthly. And once you hit that, you cannot overrule it. So let's say you say $1,000. If you spend $1,000 in a week, that next 3 weeks, you cannot use that account on Whatnot, no matter what, no matter how you want to look at it. But I guess theoretically you could take the money out, and there's people who can find ways, but it's just a thing that can help. Just to be transparent, this I'm not telling people that this was a study that was done by there's a medication called naltrexone that's used for opiate use disorder and alcohol use disorder. It's a blocker. It blocks the dopamine effect reward from the chemical that you put in.
Yeah.
Ultimately,
bring that up, because I've actually been prescribed that myself by my psychiatrist, and you know, I'll open up about this stuff, but
so there's
actually something that didn't work for me.
Some people it does and doesn't, but there's studies that, so 75% of people who have a gambling disorder have what's called co-occurring disorder with alcohol, Think about that. 75% of the people who have who are classified under the DSM-5 with gambling have problems with alcohol. So think about how many people been prescribed the naltrexone, which is either oral tablets or most likely it's a once-a-month shot. They found that naltrexone has helped with gambling and eating disorders. Vivitrol's never done the study, but others have done studies on it. Other people have indicated records of clients that had alcohol disorder and gambling. They realized, well, I'm not gambling either. You know, now that I stopped drinking, I have no urges or cravings. And they found that they've been finding that out as we go and we go. So that's something that people, if they're struggling with co-occurring disorders, that's a thing. And I also want to make it a label out that if anybody that hears this podcast is on a medication and that is dealing with gambling behaviors, and if you're on a medication called Abilify, there's an FDA warning black box warning that it does make gambling cravings and urges increase and intensify. And nobody's told that. So let's say you have a mood disorder or you're depressed and you're prescribed Abilify now, but you're not transparent that you think that you have gambling disorder. You're not going to be told that there's a possibility you may want to gamble. You know what I mean? There's no doctor ever tells you the downfall of medication. They tell you how you can reap the benefits. So just to be transparent, this is an FDA thing. You can look it up. It is 100% labeled by the FDA that it can increase in urges and cravings. And I want to bring up to you that what age do you think the first time a game of chance is introduced to us, such as like
very young.
What age you think?
Game of chance? I mean, probably as early as like 3 or 4, maybe.
So it's 6, yeah. So roughly over 60% of adolescents have gambled, reported doing some type of gambling before age 18, and about 10 to 15% of that population is at risk to develop a gambling disorder. So that's about 1 in 3 kids that have age between 10 to 14 that have gambled for something of value. And
yeah, that's crazy. It's something that I think, you know, dates back to centuries, right, of prehistoric, you know, gambling, where it was like ancient dice games in the temples and
betting
on gladiators and like horse races and things like that. Like that has existed for, you know, centuries. And I think, you know, I've done a lot of research, obviously, over the last couple months, and gambling has been a part of our everyday lives because our brains light up when there's an opportunity or a chance at, you know, a better outcome than your current hand, so to speak, no pun intended, but an opportunity to, you know, basically put your chips on the table and double them. And when any person is given that opportunity or introduced with that opportunity, even if they don't realize, or even if it's not as black and white as a game like blackjack or roulette, you know, there's a trigger or a signal that goes off in our brains that, you know, sends for that rush, that dopamine rush that, you know, you get. And so once you get it once, it's like, it's a drug, you know, it's the most natural drug I think there is, because it operates the same way as something like an alcohol or drug addiction.
It works on the same circuit and pathways, right, that substance use disorders do.
Exactly. And something that comes up a lot in GA, they talk about chasing the dragon, right? People who are heroin addicts who, you know, do heroin for the first time. It's the best experience they'll ever have, you know, with that drug, because your dopamine, your serotonin, all of those chemicals are at max capacity. And so when they're drained, and they go to replenish, they never actually make it back to that, you know, optimal state that they were in previously. And so they call it chasing the dragon because you're always chasing after that first hit. And the same thing applies with gambling or with sports cards. You know, I've talked to people, I've experienced it myself, where like you hit big in your first ever break. You know, you hit that massive five-figure card and you flip it and suddenly you're flush with cash and you could join, you know, more breaks and buy whatever cards you want because you have all this extra disposable income. And it's an illusion. It's a fantasy land. It creates this idea in your head that you can do it again, you know? And so we're constantly chasing those hits, and these manufacturers know exactly how to market it so that every new product release, there are case hits, there are top prospects that you gotta look for. There are, you know, new designs and flashy parallels.
And bounties, people with bounties and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, now it's like gotten to a point where people get off on joining fillers. You know, people get excited when they hit a team in a, you know, yeah, a random break where it's like they get one of the chasers and it's like,
I got the Spurs and
you got the Spurs in this break. Doesn't mean you're going to hit the Wemby, you know, true gold. Like you probably still get skunked. So it's like there are layers to it where it's like, at least, and I've talked about this before, and it's not endorsing gambling by any means, but at least when you sit down for a game of blackjack, it's pretty straightforward. There's a 50-50 chance that you're going to either win or lose, right? You're walking away with either, you know, more money or less money. And that's it. With sports cards, it's like, with breaks, it's like step one, you got to hit the right team within the break. Step two, they got to pick the right box or case. Then step three, the right cards have to come out. And then it's like if those
and
right
then condition come out,
right? There's it's got to be the right parallel. It's got to be a good condition. It's got to be like the auto. If it's an auto, you know, you don't want it to be streaky or off sticker and yada yada yada. I mean, it's exhausting just to talk about. And now, you know, we're talking about, now you first got to, and if we're just talking about monetary value, you've got to first get the card in, then you got to prep it, then you got to send it off for grading, then you got to wait a month, and then it comes back and it's graded, and now you have to list it on eBay and you have to pay eBay, you know, all these fees. It's again, it's so exhausting how ridiculously complex this whole process is. And if you enjoy it and it's something that you like to do and you can afford to do and you're doing it with intention and not compulsion within your means, more power to you. I respect the heck out of you. Yeah. But there are just too many people that are just constantly in it for the chase and the chase only.
I see it in chats all the time. People saying, I got to stop, man. I, or, Hey, John, I haven't seen you in a while. And then he says, yeah, man, I took 3 months off. I had to, or something. Yeah. And it's just like, you feel for these people.
I've had some of the most unassuming reach out to me through Collectors MD. And I'm obviously not going to say names, but there are some people that are very well known in the hobby that you would assume are very well off. They join high-end breaks. They spend lucrative money on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And everybody sees it because you see breakers promoting the hits. You see breakers tagging them, calling, like giving them shout outs, giving them that white glove VIP service that, you know, you would otherwise get.
Or in a free pack, you know, a retail, yeah, or something, whatever. Here and there.
And those people have reached out and they've been like, I have a serious problem. I don't know how to stop. And I feel so much pressure because people, you know, in the chat are rooting for me or expect, there's these expectations that I'm going to buy the Spurs in this upcoming, you know, 50 case flawless break or something, yeah, ridiculous like that.
So real, right? Quick, I want to piggyback on what you were saying a couple minutes ago about like the anticipation of reward. And you were talking about dopamine. So there's a thing called nanograms that we regulate on dopamine. So a regular human being should regulate around 50 nanograms of dopamine. So for the listeners out there, if you ever had a bad day where you physically couldn't get out of bed and you called out of work, it was just one of those days, you were regulating at about 20 nanograms. That's where the human brain can just can't get out of bed that day. That's why depression, you sleep a lot. So how many nanograms would you roughly think the most natural way of increasing it would be. So it's sex and sex in your favorite food. So the amount of nanograms that you would get from your favorite food is studied at 96 nanograms. Sex is 94. I don't know who did that study. Oh, I mean, sure. I know. Yeah, it's actually a real study by a university. I forget which one. And there's also there's YouTube videos that corresponds with that. But where I want to get at is, so now the nanogram levels, now the highest amount of nanograms you can receive from anything in this world is methamphetamine. It's 1100 nanograms. Think about it. So gambling is 200% of the average. So roughly every time you participate with the chance of anticipating of a reward, you're going from 50 to 250. So your dopamine levels are higher than when you're having sex with your wife or your boyfriend or your whatever, or you're eating your favorite steak or you're eating at your favorite ice cream. Think about how crazy that is.
What's scary about that, and I apologize for interrupting, but the two aforementioned activities, eating and sex, are both tied to necessities, right? We have to eat to survive, and we have to have sex to reproduce and keep, the
reproduction.
Reproduction. Human beings. Life, right, exactly. And I think naturally that's, why we instinctively want to do those things, right? Because the human body is just designed that way. So something like gambling, which, generates this dopamine in your brain and triggers the feel good sensation. It's all natural. It's not like another drug, but it's something that creates that chemical reaction. It's not tied to anything of necessity. It's not tied to anything that is of need. But if you really break it down and you talk about what we were talking about before with ancient gambling, like the temple dice roll games and the gladiators and the chariots and things like that, it's been a part of human nature. It's been a part of our vices for as long as we can remember, as long as we can,
we've been saying that saying, I bet you can't, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It's so ingrained in our every.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Everyday lives, and we don't even realize it, right? So something as innocent as sports cards or Pokemon cards, something that like you did as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, or you, see your kids participating in, or your niece or nephew or whoever, it's really just, shiny foil disguised as gambling or gambling disguised as shiny foil. It's really, really eye-opening. And these are the types of conversations that we need to be having. Because one, again, when you unravel all of this and you really peel back the onion, you start to realize that these platforms, these manufacturers, all of the higher powers that are creating these opportunities for us to gamble, glorify gambling, it's not by accident. This is all intentional. I'm actually a marketing and advertising professional. I've been in advertising sales my whole career. And, I see firsthand how they take advantage of the various psychological components of a consumer through various marketing tactics. And they do it so deliberately, and we don't even realize it. Just Panini advertising or promoting this new rookie class, which they've been doing over the last couple of days, because they just did the NFL Players Association rookie photo shoot. You know, they're promoting their new rookies' autographs, and you know, they're showcasing some of the new product coming out. It's all by design. They're planting seeds. They know exactly what they're doing.
And I don't want to name a company, but I just seen a company advertise going to see NFL players and giving them their first card. That's how. So think about Breakers. These companies are like, what do you think that's going to do?
I was a part of that whole same experience. I know I saw that clip too.
You know what I mean? So like that. So one thing I want to piggyback on is for the loved ones out there that may be watching this podcast and dealing with somebody that may have gambling, gambling disorder or behaviors, is what some warning signs are to look for. Yeah, and that's really important. You know, like secretive behavior. Somebody could be, you know, missing work or important obligations. They're shy on their rent money or money for just basic necessities, asking friends to borrow money or asking for a bailout, emotional distress, depression, anxiety, guilt. That's all types of things and there's some more. And then some type of consequences that we ultimately see from this that are linked with it is, you know, financial devastation, relationship breakdown, decline, legal issues, and mental health issues.
Those are obviously really, really important subjects. I mentioned the Daily Reflection, that it's basically a daily journal, daily blog, where I and other collectors MD advocates and supporters put together daily journal entries, and we touch on various subjects, you know, a lot of subjects that we have discussed in the last hour. The last one from yesterday is The Impact of Collecting on Personal Relationships, right? It's become such an epidemic of sorts, not just with collecting per se, but spending in general, obviously gambling. You know, there's such a thing as called financial infidelity. That's something I learned recently. That's like a real thing. I was listening to some podcast. It's like a psychiatrist that was helping somebody with a gambling disorder, and he was talking about financial infidelity. It's a real thing. And, some of the themes that I mentioned in this article, you know, is that it often begins subtly, you know, and it's something like as small as a comment from your partner about a package at the door, or a look of concern about a new purchase or a new hobby. And my wife knows me very well, and she knows that I have a very addictive personality. And I come up with these ideas and projects and, you know, new hobbies that I want to explore, but I kind of do them to the nth degree. You know, it's a little bit over the top, and that's just how I've always operated. But, you know, she starts seeing those things, and like, when collecting specifically crosses into this compulsive territory, it starts to look a lot like gambling. The thrill of the chase, the rush of a big hit, the endless just one more mindset. It's all intertwined, and then it leads to something even worse, which is compulsive and pathological lying, because we try to justify this behavior by telling ourselves we're protecting the people we love by hiding the truth, you know? Not talking about how much we're spending, dodging questions, pretending like everything's fine. We're constantly just making up excuses to cover our tracks. And the more we lie, the more intertwined and tangled things start to get. You just start creating this web of lies. And, you know, this is something my dad actually, an analogy my dad said to me a while back, but living in this kind of secrecy is so exhausting, right? Because it's a constant balancing act where you're always maneuvering pieces on a chessboard. Mm-hmm. You're always strategizing. You're always on guard. You'll feel like you have to make sure that you're protecting your king, which is really your secret, at all cost, even if, you know, they don't see the full picture. They, you know, it becomes really, really just out of hand really fast. Absolutely. So, you know, there are a few questions that I think are really important to ask yourself. And I mentioned these questions in this article where, you know, if you are collecting or if you're indulging in a hobby, sometimes it's important to take a step back and self-reflect and ask yourself, is it really worth it? Is it worth the anxiety of keeping secrets? Is it worth the shame of getting caught? Is it worth the damage to your relationships? You know, damage that takes much longer to repair than a financial loss. You know, they say it only takes, you know, 2 seconds to lie about something. Mm-hmm. But it can take 2 years to build back that trust. And that's such a real thing, you know. So it's really, really important that you are, you know, keeping a personal inventory, that you're making sure that when you're going about these hobbies, these habits, overindulging, spending on yourself, you are also taking into account those people in your life, whether that be your significant other, your partner, your, you know, family members, friends, whoever, you know, you need to self-reflect and ask yourself tough questions, because if you don't, you'll spiral out of control, especially like I just, you know, outlined.
Well, I just wanted to piggyback on that. There's a psychologist that I follow pretty avidly, Jordan Peterson. And yeah, he likes to say, and I really want people to try this if they really want to figure their lives out and figure this out. Sit on your bed one night and ask yourself, what is it that I need to change? And am I willing to fix it while you're by yourself? And think about that. And let it resonate, and it speaks value to yourself, man. You're like, wow. And while doing that, I want to go over what things you may need to think about. So there's a diagnostic criteria in clinical psychology called the DSM-5 that we use, right, as a licensed counselor and gambling counselor. There's a criteria somebody would have to meet for me to diagnose you with that disorder. So if you were to come into treatment or seek treatment or help, there would need to be 4 of these 9 behaviors in a 12-month period that need to be met. And I want to go over them if you don't mind. So number one would be needs to gamble with increasing amounts to achieve or the desired excitement. Number 2, you're restless or irritable when attempting to cut down or stop. Number 3 is made repeated unsuccessful efforts to control, cut back, or stop. Number 4, often preoccupied with gambling, like box breaks, buying cards on eBay or gambling on slot machines. And you're also reliving your past experiences, planning the next gamble, or thinking of ways to get money to gamble. Number 5, often gambles when feeling distressed, hopeless, guilty, anxious, depressed. Number 6 is after losing, gambling returns the next day for chasing your losses. 7 is lies to conceal the extent of the involvement of the gambling. Number 8 is has jeopardized or lost significant relationship, job, or opportunity because of gambling behaviors. Number 9 relies on others to provide money to relieve financial situations because of gambling. And if you have met 4 or 5, you are considered mild under the severity specifier. 6, 7 would be moderate, and 8, 9 would be severe. And when I was in active addiction, I was under the criteria of severe, just for everybody that's out there listening. And additionally, I want to add, gambling is also identified with co-occurring disorders. And what that often means is, co-occurring, it means that you have more than one disorder. So what I mean by that, if you're struggling with this, you may have substance use disorder, or you may have a mood disorder such as depression or bipolar, or an anxiety disorder, or a personality disorder. And the biggest two that are often identified with gambling behaviors is ADHD and bipolar. One, because bipolar, you can have manic episodes and go on a manic episode with whatever it is, like shopping or gambling or, you know, whatever it is that you seek for reward, and ADHD, because there's, you know, and just for people out there that you can, there are things that you can look up. And as a counselor, things that would be able to be helpful for you under a counselor or someone like me. And I want to piggyback and tell you that I am out here to help others. And you know, I'm sure you'll be able to let people know I'm willing to offer my time. And what I use in this field is psychotherapy. And often what's used for gambling addiction is what we call CBT. It's cognitive behavioral therapy, and it helps changes the distorted thinking pattern related to gaming and those distortions that your mind's telling you. Also motivational interviewing, building motivation to change, and trauma-informed therapy. It's useful for when gambling becomes a coping mechanism, because you might not realize it, but your childhood has so much effect on who we are as adults, and what we desire and ultimately seek. And you don't realize that. And it's ultimately very powerful. Dr. Garber Mate talks about that a lot. Very good. If you look him up on YouTube. And I just want to say, you said GA as a support group. So there's one that I utilized in my recovery path called Smart Recovery. And that is a program that is evidence-based peer support group. Basically, so if you look up smartrecovery.com, they have live videos that you can attend. And then usually on Saturdays, there's some areas that, like, so I live in South Jersey. So, you know, there's one that's not too far from me that I can go to on Saturdays. Basically, you don't have to mandate a higher power in this practice. It's based on evidence-based, like whatever scientists and doctors have found to be true. So an example would be if you were to be in GA or maybe Alcohol Anonymous, and you were like, let's say Alcohol Anonymous, and you were you were sober from alcohol, but you had anxiety issues and your doctor prescribed you Xanax, let's say, and you were open and honest about it and taking it as prescribed, they would either A, maybe not let you speak, or they would make you feel kind of shameful. That's the one thing that I did not like about, you know, like Alcohol Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, is the shameful feeling for using something that's evidence-based. And the people that run the support groups are either a counselor or a recovery specialist, or they have lived experience. So that's what I really like about Smart Recovery. And it's been very impactful for people that don't like the GA route, just because some people don't believe in a higher power. And the higher power can mean ultimate things. It doesn't have to be G-O-D. It could be, you know, it could be whatever you believe in. And then ultimately,
if you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The other things that are out there are medications, like we said earlier, naltrexone, mood stabilizers, SSRIs, and then financial counseling, which can help manage debt.
Yeah, that's something that comes up a lot in Gamblers Anonymous. It's called pressure relief groups, group meetings, where you can basically be assigned. They're not professional financial advisors. They're just people who have been through the program and can offer guidance and support on how to manage the debts and the financial burdens that you've put yourself through, thanks to, you know, the...
But don't get me wrong. The 12-step principle is 100%, I've seen in my recovery life, a way of living, meaning that doing the right thing, I found my life being the 12 steps. You live them over and over, doing the right things, admitting that you that you that that you have a problem and ultimately making amends right. and these type of things. You find yourself doing those 12 steps, even if you're not working them per se and attending the groups. So don't get me wrong. It's a great program and it has helped millions of people in sobriety.
Yeah. No, 100%. Like I said earlier, I have the yellow book right in front of me and we created the Collector's MD Recovery Guide, which is more or less an adaptation of the GA Yellow Book. So we firmly believe that 12-step programs and lifetime commitments to recovery are needed when it comes to any sort of addiction, any sort of obsessive compulsive behavior. And so with that, you know, you are the first licensed therapist that we have spoken to. Obviously, this is the first episode of this podcast, but we have yet to have the opportunity, other than Right Choice Recovery, which I mentioned earlier, to speak directly one-on-one with somebody that not only is a licensed therapist, but also has experienced, you know, the highs and lows themselves of being involved in not just gambling, but, you know, the hobby. And so that's very, very rare and, excuse me, unique. And so with that, Kevin, I'd love to have you become more involved in some capacity. And so we host our weekly virtual meetings every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern. Would love to have you attend when you can. The next one will be this Wednesday, the 21st at 8 p.m. We've had three so far. This will be our fourth. Expecting to have a few guests join this one. So if you can make it and be, you know, an active voice and source of help in any capacity,
absolutely,
you know, you would be so grateful for that.
Absolutely. And I would love to offer my services as well. I'm sure maybe you could either, I just made an Instagram. So when I became sober 7 years ago, I deleted all social media about a year into sobriety because I was comparing myself to other people. Something that I still do very much often because I am human. Right. And yeah. I have, you know, I compare myself, you know, because it's like, oh, well, this person's skinnier than me. This person has more money than me. So when I first got sober, it was, oh, my friends were buying houses, right? I was 25 or whatever. So I'm like struggling and this person's, you know, so I'm like comparing myself and I'm like, all right, I'm done. Facebook, everything. So I recently just made an Instagram so you can share that. And if somebody doesn't feel comfortable with, you know, maybe going to their wives yet, and, you know, going and using their health insurance to get help, I'd be willing to offer services when I can. So to give you an idea, if you went to like an outpatient program, you would roughly do a counseling session with your counselor once a week for an hour. And I would use psychotherapy, like the things that I mentioned, to help you to help out with your addiction. And also, it's not just, you know, you sit there for an hour and talk about gambling. No, it's other. And that's the other thing. It's not easy, right? It's hard. It's not easy by any means to seek help and to actually want it and to achieve it. Like you have to talk about tough things that's making you gamble, right?
A lot of sacrifices.
Absolutely. Like what's
you
making
give you, up. You might have to give up something. Like we talk about, you know, how there are layers to this and how not everybody has to give up the hobby that they love and that they've cherished their whole lives completely. There are going to be some people that are going to have to make a really, really, really tough decision. And, you know, sometimes that might be giving up their passions, giving up what they love and what they've been a part of for a long time. And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, gambling, for instance, was always kind of a part of me, a part of my personality. And when I self-excluded in the state of New Jersey for 5 years, it was like, that's that. Like, I can no longer be involved. You know, I try to go to Atlantic City. They will walk me right out of a casino for trespassing.
How long did it take you to self-exclude yourself out of curiosity?
A long time. I was going to GA meetings and, you know, they always say self-exclude. And that's another thing, you know,
but that's very hard.
Abstinence is like first and foremost. Whereas like with Collector's MD, we're not saying the hobby is the devil. You can't ever experience buying a box of cards or buying, like, you know, your favorite player. But again, it's, there are layers to it. But yeah,
harm reduction. I would identify as, yeah.
But I like some of the things you brought up as far as, like, you know, there aren't resources built into these apps yet, but you can take advantage of some of these third-party resources. You mentioned Gamban. My issue with those, I have to caveat this, is that there, for especially for addicts, there are always going to be ways around it. They find a way to get around the IP address or, you know, whatever software you have installed on your phone. People self-exclude and then end up using a friend's or a spouse's account, or just, you know, do offshore betting. So there's always going to be a way to cheat the system, even if you do have those layers in place, those security measures in place. But at least it's something. At least it's a start, and it's not like just free reign. You can do whatever you want, whenever you want. It still make it a little bit difficult for yourself. And by doing that, it allows you to pause and say, what I'm doing right now, is this really worth it? Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you just take out your phone and mindlessly join a break or mindlessly start playing live blackjack or place a bet or whatever. You can do that so easily without any guardrails. If there are some guardrails in place, you have to, even as an addict, you have to think about, how do I actually,
or even if they did something as little as, you ever gamble on the app like FanDuel, DraftKings, and it says, have you realized you've been on this for 45 minutes, or have you realized you spent this much time? If they at least said, had some type of like acknowledgement. Yeah.
You know,
like,
what the problem is, the reason why those apps do that, is because those casinos, those companies, it's a part of their corporate responsibility. They don't have a choice. They have to follow the regulations. Those regulations don't exist in the hobby. And as long as they don't exist, why should Whatnot or Fanatics Live or any of these platforms go out of their way to you know, potentially lose money by telling a consumer, telling a user, hey, you should put yourself in timeout. Hey, you may be overspending. Like, why would they do that if they don't have to? It just means that they're going to make less money at the end of the day. It's even something that's come up, you know, speaking to some of these individuals within the industry who are helping advocate for this. But at the same time, you know, those individuals might own a sports card shop or be involved in breaking in some capacity. And so by introducing something like Collectors MD into this space, it could potentially jeopardize some of their business. But the way I look at it is, in the long run, this will be beneficial because it will give you credibility with your consumer, with your customer. It will give you a sense of, you know, you are looking out for the people that spend their hard-earned money with you, and you don't just look at them as another transaction. And that's been my problem with breaking, with sports cards, with the hobby for so long now, where there are, you know, breakers, there are shops, there are platforms that take from all these customers. And as soon as, you know, one of their top spending customers walks away, they could care less. They don't offer white glove service. They don't give you VIP treatment. They don't take care of you or put you up in the penthouse or send you free stuff. Yeah, they might throw you like a, you know, a free pack here and there, but, like, let's be real. Like, compared to the amount of money that some of these people pour into these breaks, these personal boxes, I see people ripping by the case now.
It doesn't even, those big breakers run spots at, I know, like $5,000 a spot. I mean, I see people in there buying four or five. I'm like, how you just spent 25 grand? Like, how do you do that? Like, I don't get, like,
truly.
So I want to mention, there's a YouTube video called The Big Gamble, and the lady Jody that does my supervision for my license for gambling is in there as well. And they, it's called The Big Gamble Fault Line Documentary. It's about 30 minutes. It's very good. They interview FanDuel, DraftKings, or at least try to, but it's about they interview a psychiatrist who gets caught up in gambling addiction. And this is how crazy and devilish gambling companies can be, or companies that give services of rewards and chance. Right. This lady said to the VIP host on DraftKings, do you guys give out mortgage loans? And he said, no. Are you, do you have a problem with gambling?
Right.
And she said, no, I know I'm fine. I just wanted to know. He said, well, here's the $250 credit. I said, wait, this lady just asked for a mortgage loan from a gambling casino, and you had the audacity to listen to take her serious and then give her a credit.
I think about this all the time because, you know, I admittedly have spent obscene amount of money with various breakers, various shops throughout my hobby career, if you will. And when they, you know, offer something as insignificant as a $50 discount code or, whatever it is, like a $20 off your next purchase. I mean, it's offensive. It's a slap in the face because it would be like walking into a car dealership and negotiating for, $100,000 Mercedes-Benz and the dealer being like, by the way, I can give you $50 off the car. Like, what are you talking about?
How much they gave her as credit. It's the fact that you even gave her credit after she just admitted she had a serious problem. When someone
that's a whole nother
what I'm saying, like the fact that it's like, okay, as long as you said that you're gambling within your means, I'll believe it. Look the other way and I'll give you this little itty bitty credit. So right. it's and then DraftKings also talks about how they believe that they can expand their company of a macro of like, I think 200% in the iGaming industry. So this whole thing, this other side that we're battling is going to continuing to expand. So that's why it's so important. And I love the fact of what you're doing, because we need to advocate for the right side, in my opinion, and we don't have enough of that. And it's not like you're starting this with $1 billion like these other companies don't, but they're right. going to continue to grow. They're going to continue to make things more impactful to a circumstance of wanting to enter them. And it's going to be hard to get away from it. And I do believe within the next 10 years, we will be entering a gambling epidemic. I truly do, because of what COVID did, what COVID has. So over a 10-year over the past 10 years, usually we would 10 to 12X an addiction rate. What we did in COVID, there's studies that are shown that we 10X'd in that in 2 years. So for instance, when I first became a counselor, treatment centers would have like open beds in the summertime because homeless people are okay with sleeping outside. We don't have any beds in the state of New Jersey at all, barely ever, for any amount of time, any season, especially wintertime. We have a 3-month wait list in New Jersey right now, almost in every long-term treatment center. That was what we call a 3.5 level of care because of what COVID has done. It's very impactful. And you were home. That's how people, I think, got addicted to the gambling and also the box breaking. No one had anything to do.
Yeah, that's exactly why I got it during the pandemic. I agree. And it's also the way they, they're predatory with the way they market to younger consumers, the younger generation, right? These kids fresh out of college have no idea what they're doing with their money. And they see everybody else doing it. They see the influencers that they look up to and they worship, spending crazy amounts of money on cards and NFTs and crypto. And they just follow suit and they're not educated, right? And so you see these horror stories, the kid who, opened up a Robinhood account and he was borrowing, investing on options or something like that. And he woke up the next day and his account was like negative $7 million or something ridiculous. I don't know if it was to that extent, but he ended up killing himself. sick stuff going on out there. And people just, they don't have the resources and the tools to offer any layer of protection. So this isn't just for people with issues or people who feel like they are, going in a downward spiral. It's for parents. It's for, you know, brothers, sisters, you know, partners, people who, know somebody who might have a tendency or be at risk to exhibit this type of behavior or be sucked into something like this. You know, it's just creating awareness so that people know to look out for it. And, you know, they don't fall into the same traps that a lot of us already have. And because like you said, it's only going to get worse.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned, because I actually had it on my notes and I forgot to mention it. Let's talk about suicide and suicidal thoughts, because it's very unfortunate. And gambling disorder has the highest rate caused by from this disorder. Yep. So roughly they say 1 out of 5. So 20% of gamblers have either thought about it or attempted suicide. That's
crazy.
That's crazy, man. That's very, that's where it's very, unfortunate, because, that's why the whole hidden addiction thing is so for real, because you hide this whole thing and you're living this false life, and then reality sets in and you have no way to escape. That's the way you feel. Right. And that becomes what you think the only way out. And it isn't. There are people out there that are willing to help you, such as Collectors MD. And also there are places to go to get help if you really need it, and to make sure that you utilize the suicide hotline if needed, or to make sure you can DM me if you feel that type of way, or to reach out to you, because that's something that's very serious. And I want to just mention 100%. That, everybody is worthy of living, and don't let this take you to that extent, because there's always
take life for granted, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's always somebody there who will pick up your call.
And gratitude look out is for you.
Yeah. And if you don't have a phone to call somebody, ask somebody to borrow a phone. Ask,
absolutely,
your neighbor to borrow a phone. Walk up to somebody in the street if you need to. I mean, don't make excuses. There's no reason not to seek help if you're in that mindset and you're experiencing.
I had no money, no mom, no dad, no relatives in my life. My older brother was an active addiction. My older brother is 7 years sober too. He went into rehab the day after me. And we had such a rough childhood, and me and my brothers are all self-made and we're all doing well. Like, it is absolutely insane. We all should be either dead or in jail because of the background that we had in the childhood. And I just want people to know, no matter, like you said, if you don't have a phone, then, if you have nothing, absolutely, and everything feels so rock bottom, believe me, rock bottom does have a basement. So you need to realize that whole, contemplation and identify the problem and be willing to get help, because there's help out there. And believe me when I say it, life is so great. I'm now a father. I feel like I'm such an impactful father now, and I'm lucky that I got a grip on life when my child was only 8 months, and now my children are 7 and 3. I have 2 beautiful daughters, and I'm just so happy to be able to be in their lives, and I'm not out letting being a slave and to addiction. And ultimately, addiction is the Greek definition is slave, for people that don't know. So that's what I felt as I was to these things. And I'm so happy to be able to make impacts every day at my job, but also I want to offer it here. And I just want people to continue to know that, there's always someone that you can talk to, and don't think for others. That's the biggest thing. Don't ever think you're overwhelming people with your problems. People, you'll be surprised at how many people are willing to listen if you give them a chance.
100%. Well said. And I think with that, we are over an hour. I think we're closing in on an hour and a half. So I'm going to wrap this up. Do you have anything else, Kevin, that you wanted to share before we close out?
I just wanted to, you know, I'm sure you can drop my Instagram if that you want to message, but if not, my Instagram is, I'm sorry, I just made it. So it is KGK92_. So that's KGGK.
KG or KJ?
KJK, I'm sorry.
KJ, I thought it was KJ.
KJK92_. And you can shoot me a DM if you ever feel like you would like to receive some services, and we would just hop on a Zoom call or whatever, you know, whatever it is, or a phone call, and we could chat it up. And definitely, if you guys have the chance and would like to look at the Big Gamble documentary, the Fault Line documentary, that's a good one. And also, if you ever need any type of resources, I'm gonna share some stuff with you, Alex, that I have that you could probably, you know, share with the people as well.
Yeah.
And I'll be at meetings when I can, and I you guys will see this face morning just on this podcast today. And thank you 100%. For so much for having me.
Kevin, thank you for joining. You are actually the reason why I launched this podcast. You know, it's something that I've been obviously thinking about for some time now. It's just a matter of when and how we kind of inserted into everything else we're doing here. But you reaching out made me kind of just say, let's do this thing. And so moving forward, I would like to host one of these at least, you know, once a week, maybe once every other week, depending on what, you know, my schedule looks like. But Kevin, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your story, your expertise, your heart, you know, your journey. Again, it's truly inspiring. I know it's going to help so many of our listeners and our followers who might be struggling with their own habits if or when they listen to this episode back. So to everyone watching or listening, thank you for being here. This is just the beginning. Make sure to keep an eye out on our social media for our next episode of The Collector's Compass. We've got a lot more conversations and insights coming your way. And if you want to stay connected, you can find Collector's MD on all of our social media accounts. We are on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, Reddit, Mantle, among several others. So with that, make sure, you know, again, follow, subscribe, join our community for support, education, real talk about collecting with intention. And until next time, remember, collect with passion, but never at the cost of your peace. We will see you guys soon. Thank you.